Welcome to this bonus edition of Truly the Goats. In episode 6 of Truly the Goats, we had on as guest David Heim, a sports journalist born and raised in Chicago and now based in Germany, to talk about The Last Dance, ESPN's attention-grabbing miniseries on the great Chicago Bulls teams of the 1990s. Dave was also my co-host on the European basketball-centric podcast Taking the Charge, a show which included Dave and I playing at Siskel and Ebert in reviewing movies at the end of each episode. Well, The Last Dance has now finished its first run on TV in America, Europe, and elsewhere, and I recently got a chance to check out the classic movie Space Jam, starring Michael Jordan and Bugs Bunny, and imminently rewatchable and very funny movie, which, in my opinion, is a critical chapter in the story of Michael Jordan. So, in this bonus edition of Truly the Goats, Dave Hine and I, Oz Davis, discuss Space Jam in a recording from a 2013 episode of Taking the Charge. The conversation remains more or less intact with a few samples added and some sound editing. Enjoy our review and go ahead rewatch Space Jam sometime. It's truly a GOAT, quasi-autobiographical cartoon science fiction basketball movie. Based on true events, even.
Movie of the week time.
Oh boy, am I excited.
Yeah. You know what? I'm not sure if I had actually totally seen this before.
You said you had not, Dave.
I had seen parts of it. I had seen bits and pieces of it. It
was before. Everybody has seen bits and pieces.
But, yeah, and so that, you know, now I delved into it, yes, if you will.
Now his sin has been expunged. The sin that I'm referring to is the lack of having viewed Space Jam.
Space Jam.
A 1996 film.
All right, Oz, go for the synopsis.
Yeah, man, I want to get into this. This is a 1996 film starring Michael Jordan and some other NBA players, about which we will speak very much, I'm sure, considering that one of them is Charles Barkley, and the Warner Brothers Looney Tunes characters, spearheaded, of course, by Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck. This is a film about which we can say absolutely nothing negative. It is awesome in every respect on many levels. Let me begin with this one. I'll hit you with a very interesting fact here. The film is directed by Joe Pitka, who I believe directed no other major motion pictures. He mainly came to fame through music videos, a lot of Michael Jackson stuff especially. However, Mr. Pitka is in fact the creator of the most famous public service announcement of all time. This is the guy who created...
Okay, last time. This is your brain. This is drugs. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions?
Oh, wow.
We'll just begin at how awesome this movie is with that little factoid.
For those of you who don't know, just put YouTube, this is your brain, this is your brain on drugs.
And yes, please. For any people who were not...
If you just want to see it again.
Oh, yes. For any... And be reminded of the awesomeness of your brain on drugs with a side of bacon. I mean, we talked earlier about memes. This thing was generating memes in the 80s. Okay, this thing was generating memes in the Reagan era in America.
I had a T-shirt.
Oh, yes. T-shirts, posters, I mean, just jokes, you know, just stuff that you would draw in high school and, you know, show it to your friends and laugh about it. I mean, seriously, this thing, there are millions of variations on this PSA. Well worth researching for all the young folks who are non-Americans. Very funny phenomenon in American culture. This is your brain on drugs. Look that up on Wikipedia, look that up on YouTube, and you will get the fever. In any case, Space Jam itself, how can we say this? It's almost as though it's a biography film of Michael Jordan, but yet he's a superhero. So it's almost like Superman, the motion picture, a biographical film of a near fictional character called Michael Jordan. it begins in that period in the mid-1990s when Michael Jordan was famously hitting about 205 for the AA Birmingham Barons. For those who don't know baseball, that's a pretty low-level baseball team. He had resigned from basketball a few months previously and publicly stated that, you know, it was the dream of his father that someday he go out and play, you know, his favorite game, baseball, on the highest level. It begins there. And through a complicated series of events, a bunch of evil, or let's say malevolent, because they're not really evil, they're a bit too cute to be evil, a bunch of malevolent aliens seek to take back our heroes, the Looney Tunes, to an evil amusement park planet called Moron Mountain. In a not-so-subtle dig at Walt Disney, yet still funny. It involves these guys trying to take the cartoon characters back. The Looney Tunes characters convince the, or offer a wager, we could even say, to the alien Nerdlux that they play a game of basketball. The Nerdlux response, of course, is to steal the talents of how many? One, two, three, yeah, five NBA stars, quote-unquote stars, a couple of them legitimate, a couple, through the perspective of history, not so legitimate.
Just freaks.
Sorry?
Just freaks, a couple of
Well, no, I mean, you have dream teamers Charles Barkley and Patrick Ewing.
Yeah, but I mean, you had the shortest and tallest guy in the
The shortest and tallest guy in the NBA, and among, you know, the shortest and tallest ever to play in the NBA, really, Muggsy Bogues and Sean Bradley. Wow, Sean Bradley. And Larry Johnson, who for a few years in Charlotte was quite brilliant, but ultimately suffered some injuries and his career was cut way too short. The aliens in a sort of, in something that would be familiar for those of you who have seen Thunderstruck, who were lucky enough to see the Durant movie of last year, they sap the talents of these five unfortunate NBA stars and thus become amazing basketball players. The response of the Looney Tunes is to find, of course, the best basketball player alive, and that is Michael Jordan, despite the fact that he's mostly playing baseball and golf. The line that perhaps kicks everything off is the exchange between, the memorable exchange between Bugs and Michael.
What's going on here?
Why, Michael? I thought you'd never ask. You see, these aliens come from outer space and they want to make us slaves in their theme park. Eh, what do we care? They're little, so we challenge them to a basketball game. But then they show up and they ain't so little. They're huge! We need to beat these guys, because they're talking about slavery. They're going to make us do stand-up comedy, the same jokes, every night for all eternity. We're going to be locked up like wild animals and then trotted out to perform for a bunch of lowbrow, bug-eyed, fat-headed, humor-challenged aliens. What I'm trying to say is, we need your help!
Yeah, but I'm a baseball player now.
Right. And I'm a Shakespearean actor.
And the movie thus goes from there. Michael finds his way and rewrites his personal history by saying the main reason why he came back to basketball is because he was inspired by the Looney Tunes and incidentally saved the universe in the process, or at least the Earth, or at least the cartoon industry of Earth in the process. Unlike Thunderstruck, this movie displays a great amount of good humor, street savvy, ironic humor of that very particular 1990s breed. Both the main character, Michael Jordan, of course, is imminently watchable, as well as the supporting characters. Hey, they got Charles Barkley. Hey, they got that guy from Seinfeld.
Mr. Jordan, I'm the Baron's new publicist.
Hello, Newman.
Yeah. Newman, Newman is in the movie, for all you Seinfeld fans, so it'll be worth seeing just for that, for you folks. And the cartoon characters are also fantastic. Film fans may note that this is still the only full-length movie that the Looney Tunes have done. And, of course, it's all the more reason to demand, or at least request, Space Jam 2, which really needs to be made. Or at least, you know, the rebooted Space Jam, if you must go that route. I think Space Jam 2 would be better.
With of course, LeBron.
Yeah, you'd probably have to go LeBron. I think he's friendlier than the obvious second choice, which is Kobe. I think he's got, you know, more of that friendly attitude. I don't know if he can act. Kobe, I don't think can act. Although Kobe can play himself, as we saw in the approximately 14-hour-long Spike Lee movie, Kobe Doing Work. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Perhaps that might work. Although we saw Kevin Durant trying to play himself and failing miserably in Thunderstruck. I should say this as well, that you know, you compare the acting performances of, let's say, a Michael Jordan in this movie against, say, a Kevin Durant in that movie, and you know, pretty much just like comparing their skills. I mean, Michael wipes the floor with Durant. Proves that he's, if not the greatest of all time, certainly better than any contemporary NBA actor, quote unquote. This would be a serious PR coup for LeBron James. I mean, here's a guy whose stated mission in life is to become the first $1 billion basketball player. Okay, if he took a percentage of the gross, how much money do you think he could make? Hell, I recall this deal. Jack Nicholson, when he did the old Tim Burton Batman movie, managed to negotiate, okay, because they knew he was the only guy to play this, managed to negotiate a percentage of all income from this movie, okay? Still, you buy a toy based on that movie, Jack Nicholson is getting, like, some money off of that. And it was estimated that in the first 3 years of this deal, he had made something like $200 million. How much could LeBron make from Space Jam 2? Of course, I believe Looney Tunes would be all over it. I mean, here they are. They created this character for this movie, this Lola Bunny. And I don't believe they've used her in any major way since. She has done some of the TV shows that they've had through the years, but never in a serious starring role. Like they had played her up to be in this movie. You know, so I guess she's the Boba Fett of this movie. Space Jam. I mean, but seriously, I honestly believe that we can talk about Space Jam in the same class as Star Wars or other important films. I believe that this is one of the top 90s zeitgeist films. This is one of, if you want to make a collection of movies that tell you what the 90s was about, this is the movie. I mean, it's a guy that was arguably the most famous man in the world, especially after the Dream Team and Michael and Larry and Magic retired. Here's a guy who's maybe the most famous man in the world, creating his own legend, creating his own myth. There are a zillion examples in this movie. One thing I would say is you notice that Nike is not involved in this movie at all, to which he was so connected through his whole career and still is to this day, is not even in this movie. The sneakers that he's wearing are clearly not Nikes, and they make a point of that. Unlike the Kevin Durant thing, which incidentally ends with the credits rolling over a commercial for Durant's new shoe. In fact, four commercials for Durant's new shoe.
Yeah, exactly.
In any case, a good example of this Jordan recreating the myth is the very beginning. I mean, basically, okay, you get the sentimental Spielberg-like, you know, father and son playing basketball kind of scene, the Ron Howard scene at the very beginning. But pretty much the next scene, pretty much the first scene in the movie, is Michael Jordan retiring. And, you know, it's a big press conference. There's like hundreds of journalists there or whatnot. It looks real. But then Jordan comes out and he goes,
I just feel at this particular time that I reached the pinnacle of my basketball career and I must retire. The one good thing that comes out of this is that my father had the opportunity to see me play my last basketball game, and you know, that means a lot to me.
What are you going to do now?
Well, I've never really told anybody this except for one person, and but I think I'm going to go and play professional baseball.
You know, as opposed to how this really went down. And if you see the documentary about ostensibly this time period of his life, Jordan Rides the Bus, part of the original 30 for 30 series,
which is also linked on the page. I put that one up there. So
okay, good. You should. That's more or less a more serious companion piece to that.
Yeah.
to this film. If you watch that film, or if you were there, you remember, he told this, or this got to folks like Reinsdorf, Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner of the club, and Phil Jackson, you know, the legendary coach of the club. This was getting to them 24, 48 hours before he announced it. And, you know, again, he's coming off the three-peat. He is the greatest player in the world. He is possibly the most famous man in the world. Combine this with the fact that his father was killed in the intervening period between the championship and his shock retirement in October of that year. His father had been killed. Now, naturally, this is a comedy movie, so that heavy bit is glossed over. But the funny thing is that the interesting thing is, in real life, this was a shocker.
People
were blown away. The reaction from the press at that original press conference was akin to that press conference when the LAPD officer came out and said, yeah, O.J. Simpson did not come into the police department and give himself up like he said he would. It was that same reaction. It was like this, you know, it was like this gasping, oh my God, you know, kind of sound by, you know, 150, 200 people, you know, that aren't supposed to make this sound because they're professionals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, here's Michael recouching all this controversy in this, you know, everyday kind of thing. And you know, he's so good that he can do this, and yeah, it's just, we believe it and we're all for it. And none of that conspiracy whispering about how his father was killed for gambling debts or whatever, you know, this loony. I mean, I'm a conspiracist and I don't even buy that stuff. That's how far out I consider that. And then, but what's funny is this, we go into Michael's career in the minor leagues, and to his credit, Jordan plays it exactly the way it was. I.e., he sucked, you know, or at least he really wasn't very good in the minor leagues. I really appreciated that about this movie. Here's the potential for Jordan to gloss over that as well, you know, to show the three or four home runs he did hit, you know, to show the five or six game-winning RBIs he did produce. He could have done that. Yeah, he could have. But instead, he chose to play up those funnier aspects of him playing in the minor league, like the catcher telling him which pitch is next, which reportedly is based on a true story. Yeah, this actually happened to him once. You know, signing basketballs before the game. And so, you know, this stuff really happened. And so, you know, you like that. You like that about the movie. And like I say, the whole thing is just done in this charming, humorous way. You know, it's really a good script here. And it's amazing to consider that this is a good script because a lot of it was written on the fly. For example, towards the end of the movie, Bill Murray, who is a hero of anybody who watches movies, honestly, he's great at everything. Bill Murray enters the climactic game.
This is why I was born. I thrive on pressure.
And Daffy Duck says,
excuse me, pardon.
Yo, easy on the trousers, Daffy, easy.
Pardon me, Mr. Murray, something's really been bugging me.
Yeah?
Just how did you get here, anyway?
And he says,
producer's a friend of mine, just had a teamster come and drop me off, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, that's how it goes.
This could be what happened. We do know that Ivan Reitman was writing this, was putting the finishing touches on the script, and we do know that he called up Bill Murray and said, hey, I could write you into this thing. You want to go play golf with Larry Bird and Michael Jordan a little bit on, you know, some of the best courses in California? I mean, literally, that's what happened. And then he had to go into the blue room for about a day or two and shoot some shots with Michael Jordan, and so they could CGI in or paint in, whatever they did in those days, the Looney Tunes guys. So he worked on this film for about a week and a half, and half the time he was playing golf, you know, with Larry Bird. Not too bad a job, but
that's tough.
Yeah, but I mean, you get that in the movie, you get that self-referentialism, that irony that was so prevalent in 90s movies and is completely dead nowadays. And I don't suggest necessarily that we could bring it back. I don't want to be one of these old guys. However, we could use a little bit more of that in some films. These daunted films like the Dark Knight series, or M. Night Shyamalan's films, his earlier films. These are touted as wonderful films, and they're 100% without irony, even though, like, the silliness of a man dressing up in, like, latex and tights and like, jumping off of cords and, like, punching out bad guys.
Well, you know, what would be a movie nowadays, let's say in the last 5 years, last couple of years, whatever, that would fit into that, in your opinion?
Okay, I know The Expendables. Have you seen this one?
Is that...
Bruce Willis and Stallone.
And Stallone, yeah.
Are the spearheads. But it's basically like everyone, except for Chuck Norris, of those old 80s and 90s action guys. You even get Arnold, and he makes an ironic, self-referential appearance as this guy who's like the governor now. Yeah. You know?
Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah, but guess what? It's all the guys from those times.
Yeah.
It's all the guys from those times when they said, hey, look, we're doing a silly action movie. I might be starring against Dennis Rodman in my next film. You know, I'm going to do this seriously? I mean, come on.
Okay.
But Space Jam is not unintentionally hilarious. Space Jam is hilarious.
Yeah.
Dave, who until last week had not seen this film?
Yeah. I was impressed with especially after having seen Durant's acting.
Yes.
But, you know, okay, we were trying to figure out exactly when this was recorded, if it was done 95 or 96.
It was released.
Even if it was done in 95, one thing that you have to realize, though, is that Jordan had then, if it was 95, he had 10 years of Nike commercials by that point.
Yes.
So he had some acting in his background. So that
it was with Spike Lee. He had already worked with Spike Lee.
Yo, Mars Blackman here with my main man, Michael Jordan. Yo, Mike, what makes you the best player in the universe? Is it the vicious dunks?
No, Mars.
Is it the haircut?
No, Mars.
Is it the shoes?
No, Mars.
Is it the extra long shorts?
No, Mars.
It's the shoes then, right?
Nah.
Is it the short socks?
No, Mars.
Money's gotta be the shoes.
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 Shoes. You sure it's not the shoes?
I'm sure, Mars.
What about the shoes?
No, Mars.
Money's gotta be the shoes.
Exactly. He had 10 years of Nike commercials behind him, so he had some acting experience. And that's one thing, obviously, that was clear that Durant didn't have. But, you know, but still.
He's also got gobs of charisma. Maybe not as much as Charles Barkley.
Yeah.
But, you know, more than Kevin Durant, much more than God. I mean, unfortunately, Kevin Durant, if you're speaking in terms of reputation and PR and movies and stuff like this, unfortunately, he's been pigeonholed into that nice guy part. He even does ironic TV commercials where, you know, they say this, he's the nicest guy in the NBA.
Yeah.
You know, that's his role now. And unfortunately, that guy's not very interesting. Now Jordan is just, you know, he's got the $1 million smile, you know, he's got the history behind him. The opening credits are a roll of his dunks and great plays and headlines.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I mean, this guy is just like I said, at this time, he was the most famous person in the world. And I think that fuels you. I think as a celebrity, that makes you even more, or it can drive you to be even better. And I'm sorry, Durant is just not. The most famous person in the world. He's not in that discussion.
It was great because I was a huge, obviously also a huge Jordan fan, and then also I was a big Looney Tunes fan as well as a child. So, kind of getting to see that was also fun. And the music's great. You know, they recorded a couple of new songs for that. You know, there's the Hit 'Em High song. And, you know, Seal does his Fly Like an Eagle, and
the soundtrack is one of my favorites of all time.
Yeah, and then I Believe I Can Fly as well. You know?
And there's actually a rap song on the soundtrack that did not make the movie. I believe that it's included on some editions of the DVD, the video, where the Nerdlux become LL Cool J and Be Real of Cypress Hill and, you know, some other heavy hitters. That's a great song as well. Also on the soundtrack. Killer soundtrack. Especially, you know, if you're into that 90s hip-hop sound. It's all over the soundtrack. Great, great soundtrack.
Yeah, so just a really great film. And I was glad that finally did get a chance to see it. And you know, anything about Jordan. And it is very biographical about Jordan, you know, and then, you know.
Yeah, kind of. Again, it's not so much biography as controlling that image.
Put it that way.
Michael Jordan, the real person. That movie will be made, that movie where, you know, it shows, like, what a competitive jerk he was most of his life and how it affected his personal relationships.
Definitely was released after he won the first of the second three-peat.
Yeah, the first of his trilogies. And what it is it's awesome. It's a grab at, you know, controlling his own image.
Yeah.
You notice, okay, there's no Nike in the film. Let me ask you this, Dave, because I paid attention to this time. How often do you hear the expression NBA in this film?
I don't know.
You're bringing on in this film, we should say, that in addition to Michael Jordan and the five players who are victimized by the aliens, there's a good two dozen other players in here, including Vlade Divac. Woohoo! and a lot of who's who of players in the game at that time.
I don't know. I don't know if they said we need the best NBA players or not. I don't know.
Nope.
How many times?
They say NBA in the movie twice.
NBA twice.
Okay. It happens both times in the last like 15, 20 minutes, and it's both in color commentary. Don't mention Nike, don't mention NBA. Mm-hmm. The thing is, here's Michael, whose reputation, whose standing or whatever, whose presence as a celebrity or whatever you want to call it, is so big that he can squeeze out the NBA, that he can put himself up there with a cartoon mega franchise that's almost a century old, you know, Warner Brothers, Looney Tunes, as opposed to, again, something like Thunderstruck, where, you know, it's explicitly about the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah.
You know, it's explicitly about the NBA.
Yeah.
You know, this film is explicitly about Michael Jordan, and it's also extremely funny.
It is. Go check it out. You want to have anything else on that one or no?
If you haven't seen it before, see it. This is the next film you should watch.
Go check it out.
If you have seen it before, see it again. You will be surprised. I go back to this film every year or two, and every time I see it, I'm surprised at how good it is. And one of the other things I wanted to say, speaking of which, the rewatchability of this film. I was talking with Dave about this before we recorded this podcast. When you're watching the actual climactic game with Jordan and Bill Murray, and a bunch of Looney Tunes against these cartoon aliens. What happens at that point is Warner Brothers breaks out all the old gags. They mix in a couple of new ones. You get the reference to The Matrix. You get the reference to Pulp Fiction. But they break out all the old gags. And I'm not going to sit here and list them for you. You'll recognize them when you see them. And in that respect, it reminded me more than anything of going to go see a Harlem Globetrotters game. Mm-hmm. You know, you go as a basketball fan, especially one growing up in the 80s when they were so huge, much more of a cultural force than they are today. You go see a game every couple of years and you laugh and it's funny, but you're watching the same stuff that they've done for 40 or 50 years. And you forget all the routines. In that 7 or 8 minutes of screen time, they break out all the reasons why you love these characters so much, why they have become iconic in America and really the world. We have Bugs Bunny in Hungary. We call him Topshi Hopshi, which is roughly a bunny guy in Hungarian, but he's all over the world. You know, these are guys on the Mickey Mouse level. And it is also wonderful for that. We can talk about how this is a film about Michael Jordan. We can talk about how it's a cartoon film or the technology or even This Is Your Brain on Drugs. But ultimately, look, the thing is, this is a great movie. I don't think you have to love basketball. I don't think you have to get the baseball stuff at all. I don't think you have to understand the particulars. I think that it's a funny story delivered excellently and just directed well. And plus, you know, again, you got Bill Murray and Charles Barkley. These two guys make anything they're in better, period. It's just a great movie. And I'm surprised that it's not more well thought of nowadays. And I'm also surprised that they haven't done the remake or the reboot with the entire industry just cranking this stuff out like Cheese Whiz. Everything is a reboot or a remake, or at very least an adaptation. Why haven't they redone this. It's almost a good thing that Team USA is not going to play this summer, because now maybe LeBron and Dwayne and Kobe and those guys will shoot this thing. I really think it's time.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what kind of, you know, play on different stuff that LeBron would do. You know, I mean, because obviously he would be the star. You know, the whole Cleveland thing and all that other stuff. You know, maybe he's waiting before he goes back to Cleveland, before he returns to the Cavaliers.
Yeah, and after instead of the baseball thing,
he went to play for the Heat.
I'm gonna take my talents to South Beach.
Exactly. and then this whole, you know, I want to be a bad guy thing. You know, that's the stuff that will be. Now he's becoming a good guy. You know, he laughs at himself with the Harlem Shake. Of course, we got to bring it back to the Harlem Shake.
Right.
You know, laughs at himself with the Harlem Shake, you know, and... You know, he's even said it in, you know, interviews all over, you know, after the title last year, you know, I just want to enjoy the game now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's being connected more and more to Cleveland, you know. So
see, it would be fantastic. Okay, so you start this after he becomes a free agent, right? He's very conflicted about where he's going to go.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because
he's a homie, you know, he likes... You know, he does identify himself. He still has a house, I think, in Akron, doesn't he?
Right, yeah, right. So. Yeah, he can even be hanging out in Akron as it starts. And then you get Danny DeVito, who is the alien ringleader, who's the alien boss, who we last saw beamed out to the moon or whatever. He comes back, and his evil plan is to take over Cleveland.
You know, we got to write all this down and then just send the script in.
And then, you know, Anderson Varejao and all those guys lose their talent, and they need LeBron to sign with Cleveland.
Yeah, there you go.
So he signs with Cleveland, and then they pick up, you know, Bugs and Daffy on free agency. You can even have Bill Murray come back as himself.
Exactly.
In the Larry Bird role, you could have Shaquille O'Neal. Absolutely. Absolutely. And or then, Bo
and,
Jackson.
And then Jordan just, you know, says something like, you know, Kobe's still better, whatever.
Oh, man. No, it would be like they'd be practicing. Oh, and then you hear this voice. And it's
Kobe would have done better.
You need one more player. Right? And the camera pans over and it's Jordan.
And it's Jordan. There you go.
And LeBron says.
And it's not Bill Murray. It's Jordan.
No, and then LeBron says, oh, come on, you're going to play, you're too old. And he's like, no, I don't mean me, I mean him. And then the camera pans over to Kobe.
Yeah, okay. There you go.
So Kobe and LeBron have to find a way to overcome their differences and work together as a team to save Cleveland and the universe.
Yeah.
And the Looney Tunes.
From becoming nerd lurks.
Yeah, like he's going to turn all of Cleveland into nerd lurks. If they don't win this game.
Yeah.
And, of course, Charles Barkley can play himself.
So, if anybody – and Shaq as well.
Shaq is going to be in the Larry Bird role.
Yeah. So, if anybody is out there listening to this that has connection to the – you know, go ahead, just go ahead, give it to him. We just want to see it.
Yeah. You could give me a credit, like you know, inspire – or thanks to. Thanks to Ozzy. Yeah,
That's enough.
Yeah. Thanks to taking the charge.
And just listen to the show, because it will develop. You know, I'm sure we're not done talking about this film. So this Space Jam 2. So
someday.
Yeah. All right. On that note, I think let's call it a wrap.
This has been a special edition of True the Goats, an Inclusive Medium production. I'd like to thank David Hine for recording this episode with me 7 years ago. Extra material, show notes, blog posts, and other related stuff on The Greatest of All Time are available on our website at trulythegoats.com. On Facebook and Twitter, find us at trulythegoats. For more Inclusive Medium podcasts and video productions, visit us at inclusivemedium.com. I'm Lawrence Davis, thanking you for listening to the Truly the Goats podcast. And everybody, stay healthy.
Well, that's all, folks.
That's my line.
Simplified, babe. Let a star do this. That's all!
That's all, folks!
Can I go home now?